Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. History or future?
Future.
Competition or direct commission?
Direct commission.
New build or reconstruction?
Both.
Today, building for society faces complex challenges. Buildings should not only function, but also create identity, facilitate change, and open up new perspectives. The Warsaw-based firm WXCA specializes in precisely this area, with projects relating to culture, science, art, and environmental awareness. They focus on public building projects, working closely with institutions, communities, and regions. Their design are characterized by a desire to create spaces that are supported by the history of a place and the need for belonging, as well as being designed. For projects such as the Polish History Museum, the Army Museum, and large-scale master plans, WXCA combines social responsibility with architectural clarity and technological innovation with long-term community vision. This is precisely why this episode is entitled Architecture and Beyond. In this episode, Diana Slavic and Roma Vinimko discuss what it means to build for the public, how architecture can create a sense of belonging, and how we need to think about cities today to meet the demands of tomorrow with Marta Sekulska-Wronska in the Jung Talks podcast.
Hello and welcome. Today is Jung Talks podcast. We are delighted to have you with us today, Marta.
Hello, from Warsaw.
Yeah, Marta, many of your projects are museums, from the Polish History Museum to the Museum of the Army, all the way to interactive exhibition concept in a public space. You have clearly specialized in the building type, not so much in a technical sense, but in a cultural one. Why is the museum as a place of memory, storytelling, and visibility so central to your work?
Thank you for great introduction and also appreciating or understanding our work. Because as you said, these public service architectural museum buildings integrate the memory of the place or of the nation together with technology and craftsmanship in architecture. Because nowadays, also in technical terms, museums are very complicated and complex buildings in terms of technology, as well as in function layout. Museum buildings are as much complex buildings as transportation terminals or hospitals.
What does it mean to design places that don't just communicate information, but actually help to shape the identity?
Many of our buildings were commissioned by public competition. And apart from what I said in the beginning, that I prefer direct commission, well, in competition, the client receives many, many ideas that are in general taking into consideration the same requirements. But in the competition, when you compare many works, then you can see the differences and simply choose the best one. The best one means the one which takes into consideration most of the requirements and do it in most beautiful way. Beautiful or equally smart way. Many of our projects we won because of understanding the context. And it's not only the built context that you can see or sense with your senses, but the context is also political or historical. All these means the identity of the place, identity of the community that used to live there or used to create the space or the facility. This is exactly what I meant, architecture and beyond, that it's not only the skills that architects have trained or are trained during their studies, but these are also soft skills in psychology, anthropology, and other knowledge that helps you to understand the context. Because then you can create a building that serves specific functions to the community, but also is very much integrated with the surrounding and multi-level contexts.
Museums are changing rapidly nowadays. So today they are more than places of the simple displaying. They're spaces of experience, social interaction, and often a hybrid between exhibition, education, community, and technology. What are some of the new demands you're facing as architects?
I completely agree with what you said, because the museum should respond to the needs of nowadays society, should find a way to communicate with new generations. And it is not only showcasing artifacts from far away or showcasing weapons from ancient times, but it's telling the story and making it able to remember.
Is there a moment in every project when you feel now this space become an experience, or it is always about the interaction of all the elements, architecture, content, materials, light?
We even say that the visit in the museums begin on the website or anywhere that somebody gets information that there is something interesting to see or to visit the museum. This is the first impression that somebody gets, and later somebody gets to the site. And we often say that there are two ways of experiencing architecture. The one is from the far, when you see the form of the building, the surrounding, you get interested and you go near, and then you can see the detail and see more information. And this is when such visitor is being prepared for the contact with artifacts, for the contact with the exhibition or the narrative of the building. It is very important for the experience of the visitor, whether his trip was convenient, he found the way to the entrance easily, and when he got into the building, whether it was for him intuitive where he should go. This is the challenge often for the older museums, you know, from 1900, for example, or 1800 even, that were simply not prepared for such an amount of visitors. I think great example of Louvre right now.
Actually, I was just thinking about Louvre exactly when I remember I was there like with 15. You could just buy a ticket and go in. And nowadays you need to reserve your ticket already like weeks in advance. And you need to define your time slot just to be able to get in. It feels kind of crazy somehow.
Exactly. And we all know this is the Museum of Great History. So we can showcase on this one many circumstances that other museums also face. But we all know the extension by pay, right? Another extension and refurbishment is planned. And now again, Louvre needs to adjust for the contemporary needs of the visitors and to the contemporary amount of visitors wanted to visit Mona Lisa, for example, right? And they need to meet the needs both of the safety of the artifacts, but also to stay still attractive for the visitors. Because I'm sure that there are many of us that would skip Louvre right now because they don't want to lose so much time in the museum. All this combined is our experience and our willingness to get back to the museum. Our experience that we will pass to another person. You know, it's not only knowing the history by the individuals, it's sharing culture and values of the nation or of the community. That's why it's not only architecture, it's not only artifacts or its history, it's culture. And culture is very, very wide.
you're not only doing the architecture of the building, you're also like planning the interior design, but at the same time, the exhibition design as well, meaning the experience of the visitors, right?
Yes. There are many ways of commissioning or preparing such a documentation, but mainly together with the architecture of public buildings, we are also asked to provide the interior design of the building because it should be coherent and it should keep you in the same mood, right? While the exhibition sometimes is something separately commissioned, and then we only consult the technical requirements with other colleagues that provide the design for the exhibition. But also we as an architectural team, we sometimes enter such competition to provide also the exhibition because it is very important for us to make the building coherent.
We were talking at the very beginning about competition and direct commission. If we think about your projects, most of them are the result of competitions. So how does that shape your design strategies?
In the competition, it's like Olympics, right? You need to be the best. It has, of course, great opportunities for the project, for the client, because he can choose from several options. But he needs to understand how much work it cost and how much engagement it was from the competitors, right? The problem is that the clients, mostly public clients, don't have that kind of budget to cover all the cost of, I don't know, 30, 60, sometimes 100 competitors, right? And you just work because of your ambitions. You are driven by the will to create something and you have no guarantee to be paid anyhow. In different countries, there are different conditions in the competitions. And this coverage of costs is treated differently. So being an architect, you just choose what kind of competition you would like to enter, right? But our main motivation as a team is to create significant and complex buildings because simply we have such a desire to solve the problems. We had such an experience that we don't win simple projects like schools. We win such complex competitions for museums or big complexes, etc. Because there was something difficult you need to solve. And even 2 days ago, we were on the results gala in Warsaw for the competition for ice skating hall complex. And we saw there were several entries and we got the second prize. And we saw from other entries that we had such idea, but we went further. We thought this is a good idea, but not the best. We are still looking for better idea or better solution of this particular problem. And of course, the time is limited on the competition. So it's really about how the team can communicate, how fast can we think jointly about the same thing. And this is really a magical moment, I would say, you know, when there are several ideas. We have workshops. We have lots of dialogue in the team. We have consultants because we also cooperate with anthropologists, for example, to have, you know, other opinion. So we have this part of dialogue. It's the magical moment when every member of the team starts to think about the same. Because on this level, you don't really have all the drawings, right? So it's all in your mind. And we find the way to communicate with each other. And we are a team of individualists. We combine different skills and every team member have different tasks to do in the team. This is the magic that happens in concept design when everybody, even doing other things, think about the same. I experienced it several times and really when we are on this level of mutual understanding, we win. At least we got awarded.
If it's okay for you, let's take a leap because as important as museums and public spaces are, they won't save the world on their own. I think you agree. So to truly make a difference, we need to shift other levers. How can we design cities today that still work tomorrow? If I think, for example, about Warsaw, there was obviously such a huge change within the last, I would say, 15 years. How do you think about designing cities that still work in future?
The most important thing is that the cities are for people. Whether they were designed, 200 years ago or now, they are still for people. And again, look, this is so coherent. Understanding the needs of the society gives us the knowledge to design public service architecture, but designing a city is at simply bigger scale, but also needs this understanding of the need. So it begins with understanding the individuals and then the group of individuals, what types of mobility they need. And we often say that the city begins beyond or between the buildings. So understanding the public space helps us to define the spaces for buildings and to connect the buildings and fill them with needed functions. The greatest shift, how I see it, in the needs of individuals were in transportation and the mobility in general. I'm not talking about trains because these are for, bigger distance. Of course, the underground makes a difference if it is in a city, but only big cities can afford that. But the individual car is something that changed our cities. I thought, how many years did we have such a boom for individual cars? But in Poland, I would say it was only 50 years. Because earlier, really a few people could afford individual car, and the real boom was after the transformation. So in the 90s, the individual car gave you the sense of freedom. So we built infrastructure for cars and the cities became for cars. The way we understand now the car is that we need some means of transportation. We need to get from one point to another. But if we have so convenient layout of the functions in the city that you don't really need to go from one angle to another in the same day several times to fulfill all your duties or family duties, you can do it not in an individual car that waits for you for 8 hours to drive you from one point to another for 20 minutes or so. And you have the choice to use the public transportation that is really easy because you don't need to search for the parking place, etc. And you don't need to pay the insurance and all, the formalities. We can think about this or the public space another way. And this is exactly the revolution in thinking that we are facing now, not only in Poland, but in general in Europe, I would say. And many capital cities or big cities upon rivers move the highways that were designed along the rivers outside the cities because we don't longer need them. And we need to do something with the infrastructure and we need to fill the void after this infrastructure. So each time is to understand the needs, and it's natural process that cities are changing, as well as historical buildings who were refurbished and rebuilt several times. If you see some historical buildings, you have layers from many historical styles. Their interiors were rebuilt to meet the needs of the tenants or the users, right? And exactly the same process, but on a different scale, is with the cities. So when designing a district for 2050, for example, as we had such a chance once, we wanted to design a flexible structure that would fit to technologies or technical solutions that we not yet know, but we give them space. And the base for our concept was the values for the community. And this doesn't change. I mean, we are humans and we need to communicate and to be with other friends, relatives, and so on. We need a place to meet. That's why we started designing the master plan for a new district in Warsaw from designing community place, a common park in the center of the district, and then thinking how we should communicate it with other places where the buildings will be. So designing from the scratch, from understanding the values or naming the values that we want to meet, I hope that it will make the design up to date even in 25 years. Because such basic human needs won't change. That we want to be together, we want to be safe, we want a safe environment for our children. So we need a school nearby. We want our children to go on foot to the school, not crossing, you know, big roads. These are the basics. If we solve such problems in the beginning, then any puzzle you take from this jigsaw will fit it.
Turning the question around, what can we learn from the past when we are designing for the future?
I think that forgetting about human needs is something that we should learn from the past. Or thinking that people should adjust because we won't. We as humans, we use simple solutions, but also we follow the quality. There were many buildings or urban solutions that didn't think about the quality of life. For example, they minimized the space of living or the height of the apartments. And now you see such building being abandoned. While, for example, historical housings, you know, I mean from the 1800s, for example, they are still very desirable spaces to live because of the height, because of the quality of the space. So each time we abandon the requirement of quality and think that people will adjust, this is really a short-term solution. Perhaps it could meet, you know, the needs for 10 years, 20, but that's it.
When I think, for example, about changing within the city, so Berlin actually has this discussion of banning cars out of the city. I'm really concerned a little bit about how this should work, because even though I know the city for 30 years now already, there were so many changes in a positive, but at the same time in a negative way. And thinking about the fact, for example, being alone in the city, for example, you're meeting your friends for a dinner or go out to the bar, and then you need to take the public transport to drive back home alone. That's something I wouldn't really feel comfortable.
I'm so glad that you mentioned it, because it takes into consideration the emotions. We are driven by emotions as human. Whether it is a museum, a concert hall, these are the emotions that makes us feel good or bad in such a situation. And introducing such a change, whether it is a building or a city, as you mentioned the example, the architect needs to understand that it's not only designing the space, but also the emotions. The city officials in such situation as in Berlin or any other place that want to move out the individual cars from the center needs to accommodate those emotions driven by fear, fear of change, but also simple fear of safety. This could be done in many ways. We mentioned the SIPTIT requirements for design. Designing a city is also designing the line of emotions, and it's not a straight line.
I'm just thinking about, you know, I'm taking, for example, away during the day when you have like daylight, many people are on the way, everybody's like busy. And you take the same way back during the night, maybe late night, after midnight, something like this. So you definitely have less people. You have different people that are on the way. How can architecture really help to make spaces safer, let the people feel more comfortable. So what would your suggestions be on this?
Every situation would be different, so I don't have, you know, one advice that I could make, but I can tell you about it on an example of our design of a square in the very center of Warsaw. It was earlier a very busy crossroads. The square is even called Five Corner Square. The city of Warsaw decided that now they move cars from the center, and they began with this part as the center part of the master plan. So earlier it was a crossroad, and we introduced completely pedestrian zone and provided 22 new planted trees on a height of 6 to 9 meters. And the process of agreeing planting the trees within the city infrastructure was really terrible, I need to say, because we needed to agree with every media supply. But the place changed completely from the traffic zone focused on cars into a pedestrian zone. But you saw only the trees above you. And you could imagine that the public opinion was that there is no greenery, because everybody wanted to have the greenery on their site level. While this was not a place for such solution, because it was really in the very center. So there is a lot of now pedestrian crossings and pedestrian traffic instead of car traffic. But again, we consider even the shifted. The center of Warsaw is quite a safe place, but after the dusk, perceiving of the space is different, as you said. And we don't need the bushes that somebody could hide behind them, that somebody could lie in them. So we introduced this greenery that formed now after 5 years, a green roof above the pavement. And it is nicely shaded during the summertime, etc. You can see completely what is going on the old piazza. What makes this place really lovable, because it's not a big space. You see everybody and you feel in touch with everybody. These are ways of communication. And nearby, there are smaller squares that have more greenery on the bottom level, right? So you can recreate in different way. In the city, different spaces need different solutions.
Our episode today is titled Architecture and Beyond. What does and beyond mean to you personally?
This is something I learned, not at the studies, but having our own practice, that it's not only architecture. Being an architect means to be sometimes a psychologist. Not only to understand the context, but sometimes also to being able to communicate with your client. You really need to understand that we are all different, and that the client, for example, don't understand the drawings. So then you need to find a way of communication with the client to help him understand. Because you are the professional and you should know all the ways how you can communicate and help the client follow you in this process. So this is the first thing. Another is that having your own practice is also a big part of business. We all want to create, and this is our biggest motivation. But if you don't have, I don't know, other investments, then it should be something that you do for a living, right? So this is also quite a difficult task, how to make the offer that would be competitive, but also that would deliver the quality that is needed. And I know that in different countries, there are different requirements and so on. But we still face, as a group of professionals, unequal conditions. It is sad that there is nothing like fast, good, and cheap, right? but you still find such offers on the market from some architects that are very cheap. It is very difficult to compete only with price. We want to compete in quality. This is our aim.
Would you say that it might be helpful, thinking about our education, to add also things like philosophy, psychology, maybe anthropology?
Absolutely. And, you know, on Warsaw Polytechnics, I finished the Faculty of Architecture, and we have the elements of psychology, elements of philosophy. But it was nothing, I would say. I think that even these subjects should be explored more during the study, because then you have time for it. Later, you are driving fast, too fast. Perhaps this is the subject for such conversation as we have today, that young architects should be simply aware that, look, this is quite an important subject. Don't just, you know, miss it on your studies. Put some attention to it, because later it could be really 50% of your success. Not only the great design, but if you can communicate this great design to your client or to the city officials that give you the permit to build. So, yes, absolutely. Right now in Poland, many investments are developed in a social dialogue or in social consultations. This is also a special skill. What should you show? How should you communicate it to non-professionals to get the feedback that you need for development of the project, and in the same time not scaring the people? Because, again, we are only human and we react with fear to any changes. This is natural. Yes, of course, you can learn it from your own experience, but you can be taught how to do it in a good way during the studies or special courses.
Okay, and to wrap up our conversation, we always end with a personal question. Marta, which contemporary building would you like to have rebuilt?
To have rebuilt? Oh, I was expecting what I like.
Maybe the Louvre.
Okay, but I find it rather as an extension, and yes.
I mean, why thinking small, you know?
In general, I would say that I respect the past and try always to understand the reasons that something was developed. If there is a building that still is serving its function, I don't see a reason to rebuild it, because I don't find it, you know, up to date in terms of the beauty or design. I respect that in the past there were different requirements. But if it doesn't function well and it would be abandoned because of that, it should be rebuilt.
As we have the current discussion about these existing buildings, like not demolishing old buildings, is there anything you would like to say to the younger generation, like even younger than our generation, to keep it in mind if they want to make architecture? For example, like being respectful with the design, with the idea that was behind. But is there anything you would like to give them on the way?
There is no recipe that would be universal to every situation. Take your time to understand the situation, to understand the context. If you don't know something, don't be afraid to ask. And then when you feel that you have all the data to analyze, to make a proposal, then you do it. And you find the best solution. There were many times that we were asked for demolishing or refurbishment of the building, but we asked the client the questions: why, what is the purpose, what you want to gain, etc. And even yesterday we had such meeting that there was an idea of new development, demolishing existing buildings, etc. But within a dialogue, we found out that it could be an advantage of the site to keep the existing building, to adapt it, because it gives business opportunities to the clients faster than a new development. And yes, be open to different solutions for different situations. This is what architecture is also about.
Thank you so much for this advice, for being so open with us, for your time and the inspiring words. It's time to say goodbye to our listeners until the next episode of the Jung Talks podcast.